RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Remember back just over a month ago, we were talking to Alia Bland, co-founder VFF and RCR, talking about her initial meeting with the COVID inquiry, the commissioners for that inquiry, and that was interesting to get an insight into how that felt. Well, there has been a second meeting and more to it than the first meeting. Well, we'll find out because Alia is with us right now. Hi, Alia. Thanks for coming back on.
Hey, Paul. Good morning.
Okay, so I'm just remembering back to how you described the first meeting. It was, I remember you saying that there were a few, like, oh, moments from the commissioners as you went through some of what you had to say. So I remember that. And here you've had a second meeting. First of all, what were the circumstances of a second meeting? Is that a usual thing to come back and get another meeting like that?
I wouldn't think so, but we thought we'd be cheeky and ask because on the first meeting, we didn't get through, you know, sort of didn't even make it to the halfway mark through our presentation of like 89 slides.
Wow, that's a lot.
We knew, you know, obviously we could see we were running short of time. And so we skimmed over some things that we definitely wanted to cover off. We had to prioritize quickly as to what we were going to include and keep out. And so we thought, well, why not just ask for another bite at the cherry and see if they'd give us another slot. And they actually did. They said that they'd go away and talk about that. And they came back to us with some times. And so we did. We got together and we figured out what we would like to include this time and reworked the presentation, the remainder of the presentation, to fit in the 90-minute slot that they had allocated.
Okay, so what material did you take with you for the second bite, let's say? And I imagine that you didn't want to waste the opportunity, right?
No. And so this time we took a slightly different approach. So we were focusing on lots of different issues, but we boiled it down to three things that we wanted them to take away from it, which were freedom of speech, that we wanted to preserve freedom of speech, people's bodily autonomy and informed consent, the right to choose without coercion or punishment, what goes into our bodies, and also that we wanted to push back against any future authoritarian governance. We looked at, in terms of topics for the session that we had with them, we looked at briefly at the interim pandemic plan, because it had a lot of interest that was going around online about that, and anxiety that was accompanying it from people from within this community. We wanted to look at government misinformation, the vaccine mandates and the passes, Parliament protest, and the media as well. Bearing in mind that this particular phase of the COVID inquiry does not have scope to look at things like vaccine injury and things like that, or safety, we kind of covered that in a roundabout way within those different topics. So without being direct about it, we managed to still make those points where possible, but that's not something that they had the scope to even really include in their report. So we figured we better to go for the things that they can include in their report, make sure that we cover them off well. So the difference with this presentation was it was quite heavy on video content. So we wanted them to just really sit there and watch and listen to a whole lot of the contradictory information that was out there from the government, you know, that they were saying one thing while doing another, or also saying one thing while the information that was out there, the research, the evidence from overseas, was telling a different story. And I think that went really, really well, actually. It was very powerful. And
You could see by the looks on their faces, yes, and reactions, yeah?
Absolutely. There was nowhere to go on this. So you played some clips, and we can perhaps share the audio from some of these, that looked at things like Jacinda Ardern, Chris Hipkins, Ashley Bloomfield and co, making all sorts of statements in the media about how no, we would not be, they would not be making the vaccines compulsory at all. And this was in the early days. And Chris Hipkins even goes so far to say as that was disappointing sort of misinformation that was going around out there to upset people. And so, and then that was spliced together with footage of the unfolding kind of mandates as they were rolled out little bit by little bit. And culminating in Jacinda sort of saying, if you want to get your hair cut, get vaccinated. If you want to go to a cafe, get vaccinated. And it's a really powerful way of putting it together. And so I have to say a huge shout out and thank you to Coronavirus Plushie from on Twitter, who has done a stellar job in putting together a whole lot of this footage that is a great thing to look back on and to see just exactly what happened over that time.
Well, maybe we should hear some of that, probably not the whole thing, but certainly excerpts that really drove home the punch, so to speak. What would you like to play first? I guess if we go in some kind of chronological order.
Yeah, so I think best start with the one where they're talking about how they will not be making it compulsory and that people will have the right to choose. And so we'll play a bit of that and then we can move on and listen to some the rest of it as we go.
And I will have to say I was alarmed at the number of letters that I've received from people concerned that the government would be making COVID-19 vaccinations compulsory. This is a direct result of deliberate misinformation that's being spread through social media. The government is not making COVID-19 or any other vaccinations compulsory. It's not going to be compulsory, but my message to everyone is it's safe.
The government's made it really clear that the vaccine won't be mandatory in New Zealand, and I think that's the case in just about every country around the world.
As a government, we will not be making it compulsory. However, for our frontline workers, we will be considering whether or not we're meeting our health and safety obligations.
The government order says everybody who works in MIQ facilities or at the border must be vaccinated against COVID-19.
From next week, we start working through the individual data to ensure that those who we expect to be vaccinated have been. If they're not, they're moved on.
People working at the border, we will be saying that to work at the border, you have to have a vaccine. And then if you say you don't want to have a vaccine, you turn that down, then we'd be looking to redeploy you elsewhere.
They're looking at whether they can extend this order in the future. And so port workers here might at some point be moved on from their jobs if they keep refusing the vaccine.
If there isn't an alternative, then their role in the NZDF will be looked at. They may be terminated.
So they may lose their job if they don't take the vaccine.
Yes. I'm an AUT student, and we've been informed that if we are to continue to go out on clinical placement, well, they're required to get the COVID-19 vaccine unless we have some sort of medical exemption.
All right, so that's how it sort of started. Yeah, wasn't how it was going to end, though, was it? Anyway, let's keep going.
Yeah, so then we moved on to playing some clips of things that illustrated the fact that were, you know, the issues with the whole designation of cases and deaths and these sorts of numbers that were all over the show with respect to the 1 o'clock stand-ups and the media. And there was a good clip there that was of a news report that was talking about that man who was shot. He died of a gunshot wound in West Auckland. And he was also recorded as a COVID statistic as a death because he happened to have COVID when they tested it. And just how absurd that was. And that was, of course, something that a lot of us were saying at the time was, hey, how are they coming by these numbers? And why are they using these kind of, they're fudging things to drive up the fear in the population when it's not actually true what they were saying at all. And so that was played and accepted, you know, by them as, yeah, there's sort of nowhere to really go with that kind of thing. And then there was another clip, what we entitled Weasel Words, from a top New Zealand expert in inverted commas, talking about, well, it was on one of the morning shows on television where one of the hosts asked Michael Baker, what was there out there in terms of negative adverse reactions that are being noted down by the authorities with respect to the vaccine. And he kind of made some comment that there was nothing really that he was aware of. And so then that was juxtaposed next to the actual information that was being put out by MedSafe at that very time. I can't see how, you know, how someone in that position was not across that kind of information when they're tasked with going out and speaking to the public about it. They should have been across all of that information. I would argue that they were, and they chose not to say it to the public for fear of spooking them. There were also some really good footage from international areas with people like Rochelle Walensky, who was the CDC director, and the kind of admissions that they were making along the way about how they knew that the vaccine wasn't stopping transmission, and they could see that. And of course, these people are all months and months ahead of us down here in New Zealand. And while at the same time as they are saying these things publicly in interviews that are going out on, you know, on their radio networks or TV networks and things, we are doubling down on mandating the population here in New Zealand, whilst also having our Prime Minister at the time telling the public that we fully expect that those people who have been vaccinated for COVID-19 will still get COVID-19. And you know, how we were raising the point that how can you go ahead and ruin people's lives when you know damn well that the product that you are making them take to supposedly end this inverted commas pandemic was not going to work. And, you know, and so we just basically pulled out video after video after video that slammed home that point. And there really was no questions that could come back from their side, because it was obvious, it's in your face. They knew, we knew, and the government was telling the public another story.
All right, so do you want to play the Jacinda clip that you just referred to, maybe? Because I can already feel the PTSD.
If you want summer, get vaccinated. If you want to go to bars and restaurants, get vaccinated. If you want to get a haircut, get vaccinated. If you want to go to a concert or a festival, get vaccinated. If you want to go to a gym or a sports event, get vaccinated.
You made a really good point there, Ali. It's always drilled a hole in my head because of the timeline difference between the Northern Hemisphere and here and them being ahead of it. They knew.
They knew.
In a long way in advance that they just knew. Yeah,
they totally knew. And there was a quote that we pulled out from Rochelle Walensky, the CDC director, that said, "I think perhaps we had too little caution and too much optimism for some good things that came our way." And she was talking about the vaccine. And she was talking about how, apparently, being at the CDC, no one had told them that there might be issues with strains changing, or that there might be issues with waning immunity and all this kind of thing. It's like, really? You're actually the world kind of authority on
this. Dumb guy on the street knew that.
Yeah, really? You know, so that was another kind of, you know, just an exposing these people for, you know, the types of people that they are. So we couldn't, of course, go past the classic one of Jacinda talking about the two classes, you know, two class society. That is what it is. When she was asked that question by the reporter back in October of 2021 of whether or not she was creating, you know, a two-tiered society. And, you know, again, there's no wriggling out of that. That was an atrocious admission that she made about what she was actually doing within the country and the user.
Alia, out of everything I heard, and I heard a lot of bad stuff, that was the worst, because I never, ever thought I would live to hear a prime minister, a leader of the country, ever say that, ever.
Yeah, ever. It was, you actually couldn't believe the arrogance and and the smile that she had when she delivered that. It was just so gut-wrenching, awful, when you were in the middle of it and it was affecting so many people's lives, for her to blatantly say that is what it is. So, yep. So, of course, we played that.
Should we hear it again? just for the record, should we hear it again? Folks,
prepare yourselves,
get ready.
Everybody.
Yeah, look, block your ears and go la, la, la if you don't want to hear it. But let's just hear that again.
So you basically said this is going to be like, well, it's almost like you probably don't see it like this. There's two different classes of people. If you're vaccinated or if you're unvaccinated, you have all these rights. If you are vaccinated...
That is what it is. So, yep. Yep.
All right, there it is. In audio terms, black and white.
Yeah, all right. Sorry about that for everybody. It's not a nice thing to hear, is it? We went on to talk about vax passes and gave some examples of how that impacted people, especially children, and the ridiculousness of it, even going so far as to certain public toilets around the country. We were not allowed into if you didn't have a vaccine pass. That's how absurd it was.
Or they were closed, so you couldn't, you know, use the convenience.
Mm. Yeah, so we just wanted to show, you know, this is because I think that some of these people in these positions, unless you lived it, you don't really fully appreciate exactly how much it impacted people's everyday lives. And then, of course, we crossed over to the protest and we played some footage of the types of people who were down there and the reasons that they were there. And this footage was really showing that they were just everyday Kiwis. They were just good people who had been pushed to the limit. They had nothing else left in their lives. And Claire told a story, and this was sort of more towards the end of the protest, where there was a man who had come down. He'd lost his house, he'd lost his job, he had nothing left, he had his car, and he'd come down to stay at Parliament in a tent, and he'd brought down with him a vial in his tent. And on the day that it unfolded with the police descending upon the protesters, they tore up his tent, and of course all of these belongings were burned and destroyed later. And they wouldn't let him go back in to get this particular item that was in his tent. And it was his father's ashes.
Oh, man.
And, yeah. And they destroyed it. That was the only thing he had left.
That's too much.
Yeah. And so that story was told. And, you know, I think that these things can't help but penetrate hearts.
You would hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty devastating, right? And we played a couple of compilations from Jess and Paul, who are from Liberty Bites, who have put together the most incredible photos and to music. One was of the protest itself when it was underway, and it was, you know, showing the truth of what it was like down there at the protest and the types of people and the feeling and the vibe and how it was completely at odds with what the mainstream media was trying to tell people. And then we butted that up against the final day and the behaviour of the police. And, you know, I explained to them that when I was heading down for one of the last times that I went down, I had asked my children, you know, hey, can I take your swimming goggles, please? Because I have a feeling that I might need them for pepper spray. And how, as a mother, you know, just a regular mother in this country that is our country, that is not the sorts of words that you think that you'll be uttering to your children, that you expect the police are going to do that to you. And we also showed the photos that showed people pouring milk over their eyes and across their faces because they had been sprayed in the eyes with pepper spray by the police that had sound cannons used on them. And how, you know, we on that day, everybody understood the benefit of milk in that situation. These are just Kiwis who are there peacefully standing, and things only, you know, really turned when the police came with their force. And so I think that those, you know, this is where the video and the photo footage, you know, all you have to do is play it and sit back and let them experience that of what they're seeing with their own eyes. And maybe they'd never seen it before, but I would like to think that we walked out of that meeting or, you know, online meeting at least, you know, even if none of this really makes a difference in the report or in the scheme of things, you've got through to the hearts of some of these people. I don't think you can walk away from that. You know, it does affect you.
Yeah. Wow, that must have been quite an experience, and I really hope it hit him. I really hope it did.
I think it did, and in the end, comments were made about their genuine. It felt really genuine, and they reiterated it multiple times that they were very, very grateful for us participating in the way that we did and giving them the insight that we did and speaking on behalf of, you know, all the people that were at these events. And we made that point right at the very beginning that we were there today on that day representing the voices and stories of over 100,000 Kiwis and their families that were part of Voices for Freedom. At the time, and so it's not just three women sitting in that room. We were there trying to share the experiences of all these people that we have been dealing with over the last 3.5 years.
Brilliant. That's what I call doing God's work. If you don't mind saying.
I was pretty wiped out after that because I think I did most of the talking, and it was quite an emotional roller coaster.
I can bet.
But so important. I think it was so, so important to have it said, and it's going to be part of the report, so they tell us. So.
And if you didn't do it, who else would have?
Nobody. I don't think that there was really anybody else that was, from what I can tell, you know, the sorts of other people that were being approached for these meetings were people that were reinforcing the way that it was done. We're grateful for being, you know, kept safe, in air quotes.
Yeah.
And so I think it was really, really important for them to see the video footage of the kids, these teenage girls, talking about how they couldn't get their driver's license. They'd finished school and they lived rurally and they wanted to start a job, but they couldn't get their driver's license. And it just put a great big pause button on people's lives. And that has to be accounted for. It's not okay.
I agree.
And we never want that to happen again.
Well, you've played an incredible part, you and Claire and all the VFF supporters and the people behind the scenes. Thank you for doing that, and great to hear a direct report back, and fantastic you were able to go back a second time. Go back a third?
Yeah.
Or is it phase two?
We will be in phase two, you bet your bottom dollar.
Okay, Alia, thanks for coming on and sharing that with us this morning.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.